This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. And on the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. Welcome to the show, Bridget. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Lovely to be here, Dash.
I'm really excited to talk to you about this topic because this is something you brought up in an interview a couple of weeks ago with the Evening Edition. And what you said on the show was something to the effect of what's unfortunate about our political landscape right now is that we've moved away from reform politics to personality politics. So that is pretty much what our discussion is going to be centered around today. Let's dive right into it, Bridget. What exactly did you mean by that?
Well, you know, a few months back, we talked about whether or not the reform era was over in Malaysia, and I argued that it's not over.
That's right.
But that the locus and the focus of that is moving away from the elites. But more now we have to think about how the system has changed. What's happening in Malaysian politics? You know, we're moving from pre-election to post-election coalitions, which I think is becoming the case. But the nature and the focal point of politics in Malaysia is shifting. And it's not quite there fully, because you still have systems that exist from the past. And there's kind of a hybrid system that's there. But when I talk about personality politics, we have to look at the fact that the driving forces of what's happening in politics in Malaysia is determined by the issues around personalities, such as how they relate to each other, what are the personal interests of individuals. And this in itself helps us explain and understand what's happening. The driver of politics is no longer a kind of change agenda or reform agenda at the elite level. It's about how I can position myself in power, what can I get from power, and how can I remove my competition or make allies with people I need to do so. And this is where we see this discussion of personality or personal interest politics. And it also reflects a kind of real big changes that are happening in the system. It's kind of a loss of party identity, a weakening of political parties, a loss of a moral compass in politics, kind of no clear ideological foundations as parties have kind of gone away from their base and what they're supposed to have stood for now to sort of, you know, for deal making in some form or fashion. And we see that, you know, it is actually the system has not provided checks on leaders because they can hop and frog to different places, and that they can take things in terms of the resources, in terms of corruption or positions that they can hold. So what we see is a situation of what I call personal or personality politics is kind of shaping that. And to put this in the context, if we think about the kind of the driver of politics from 1999 through arguably 2018, the driver was about reform, and maybe even to say to 2020. You know, we saw a situation before 1999 as a kind of focused on implementing the Malay agenda and the NEP, which happened since 1969. And before that, it was about establishing nationhood. But now we're in a very different type of politics. And so it's how do we frame it? How do we understand it? And I'm starting to use this concept, personal or personality politics.
But Bridget, didn't personalities dominate our political landscape for years and years, right? I mean, back in the day, you mentioned the 90s. In the 90s, a lot of people talked about Tun Dr. Mahathir, and then people in the late 80s, 90s, people talked about the animosity between or the growing tensions between Tun Dr. Mahathir and Anwar Ibrahim. And then, you know, later on, the big personality was Najib. And then even when we were heading into GE14, a lot of people did focus on how now years later Anwar Ibrahim and Dr. Mahathir are coming together, they are singing Kumbaya, they are hugging, and you know, the focus on was on the healed relationship of Anwar and Mahathir and how that was going to save Malaysia. Don't you think that personalities always dominated the Malaysian political landscape?
I think they were very important, and there's no question there. They've been an element, but we also see a system before 1999, before 2018, of where we had mass-based parties that were functioning that served as a kind of patronage machines. You saw a situation where the system was very much hierarchical, and personality politics before 2020 were still very much about feudal relationship. What I'm talking about are vertical ties. Mm-hmm. The people, the supporters of Mahathir, the supporters of Anwar, and they can make nice, but it still is a sense of kind of them at the top and everyone following them in that context. Now what we're talking about is a system of multiple personalities of where there is a kind of horizontal relationship, and that it is, there's lots more competition among the elites compared to the past, and there's a lot more, and this is kind of what we talk about as oligarchic competition. And it happens within political parties as well, because the divisions in place in parties like Bersatu are also real. And this is not to say that this also didn't happen before. It did. We saw a lot of the major crises in political parties happen to be around personality politics and competition. You mentioned that of Anwar and Mahathir in 1998-1999. Mm-hmm. We saw in 1987 similar competition. And I would argue some of what's going on in the crisis in UMNO today is a similar also personality competition about leadership, although it's been couched as about alliances, but it's also in part also about personalities. But I think in this context now, it's somewhat different. There is an environment of leadership failure, compared to the past, that many of the leaders have been pushed off their pedestal. That includes Anwar, Mahathir, and Najib, just to name at least three, and there are many more. And so it's a context of where the feudal ties are not as powerful and not as much of drivers as the kind of horizontal competition among the elites. Keep in mind that the driver of what happened in the Sheraton move was also about personal ambitions and personal relationships. And we can see some of that in the context of the sources of instability now. And nowhere in this context of what happened with Sheraton move or the UMNO crisis are there conversations about reform. But in the politics before this, through 2018, there was still, even through the first part of Harapan's government, there was still a focus on reform, what changes were going to bring about.
Right.
Nobody's talking about changes now, even though the system is changing.
And something you mentioned, which I found really interesting, and something I've been thinking about and wondering recently as well, because it's like you said, right? You are right. For the longest time, I think wider Malaysia did not necessarily pay attention to these so-called smaller politicians, right? People, yes, like I brought up earlier, people cared about the big guns. You have your Mahathirs, your Anwars, your Najibs, but however, it does seem like post-Lanka Sheraton, there are just so many more personalities, and the masses have branded them as heroes and villains. We are talking about the likes of Azmin Ali and Zuraida and that whole gang, and then you have people clamoring for the return of Rafizi Ramli to politics and Nurul Izzah to active politics. Do you think that the fact that we don't just have quote-unquote lead actors, but also a bunch of supporting actors and characters right now ties back to this idea of personality politics?
Yes, I think it does. I mean, people are, but this is where it goes to what I was saying earlier. It's a hybrid system, right? It's evolving from the past to the present. What does that mean? That means that there still is, and among many Malaysians, the sense that they want the leader to solve the problem. They want this, the one person. So they look for alternatives when one is unsatisfactory. And when you talk to people about, alternatives, there's always now someone has a problem. Osman has this, Rafizi has this, Arida has this, Norrell has this, you know, and so therefore, and it doesn't quite fit the kind of the big mold of what is expected, what they want is that perfect leader. And in fact, that none of these people are perfect. They're all politicians, and that makes them less than perfect, but because exactly. They're part of the process and they have to make compromises and they have to try to engage in political processes that are actually not necessarily favorable in terms of maintaining the kind of principles, positions that they can do when they're in opposition, which once they're in power, they have to make difficult sets of choices in this context. So I think that there is a lot of the factors that drive this kind of focus on personality in Malaysia. You know, the media likes to report things like gossip and stories. So this person against that person. And this is the kind of what people can easily relate to. This discussion of personality politics is kind of, you know, it's a theoretical discussion that is not that some people won't connect to. They would rather hear a story of who did this and who did what and what scandal is associated with that. And keep in mind, this type of reporting about personalities is very, very endemic in the Malaysian politics in this area. But now we're in a situation where there's so many individuals because there's so much competition and the system is shifting because the older leaders are going to have to make way for younger leaders. The pressures are happening, and the generational drives that are changing politics are bringing new actors into the system, as well as the political fragmentation. So we are, in a sense, seeing these changes where a personality politics versus vertical and feudal system is being challenged and transformed by personality politics is tied to horizontal competition.
A lot of times these personality politics have been dominating our space, you know, the so-called Game of Thrones esque type of politicking that goes on. What is happening? Who hates who behind the scenes? Did a table break? It dominates our space more than policy-centric debates, discourses, and things like that. Are there any other reasons why personality politics is bad?
Okay, so there are good things and bad things about personality politics. Okay. I think what we're seeing in Malaysia is a lot of the bad right now. You know, the personal politics focuses heavily on personal interests and not national interests. And so, you know, that what happens is people are thinking about short term as opposed to long term, and they're thinking about themselves as opposed to the country. Mm-hmm. And this is a real problem in terms of where Malaysia is at right now, because it's in a country that's facing a huge crisis in terms of the pandemic, both in the economic side as well as in the issues of health, which are still ongoing. And when you have this type of politics, it really undercuts the ability for Malaysia to move forward. But in personal systems that are highly competitive among oligarchic competition, you see this is a source of instability, a loss of policy direction. It helps to weaken and undermine institutions, and it also undercuts very importantly fundamental democratic practices and governance. And we have seen that in the last 2 years. We've seen these practices evolve from this kind of personality politics, unchecked access to, you know, using appointments to people in the GLCs. And this is not even questioned in these processes because almost all the parties do this. Right. And if they don't do it, they want to do it because they haven't been in power to be able to do that. And so we see that the kind of the focus on politics as being something for personal advancement as opposed to national public service is really start to emerge in this type of dynamics. And other countries do have personality politics. The best examples that are Malaysia's neighbors, you know, Indonesia and the Philippines. Mm. They all have politics that are based on personality and personal interests, but they have different political systems. The political system is much more hierarchical, and so therefore there is less need to accommodate when you're a president versus when you're a prime minister. Prime minister, you have to constantly face a vote of no confidence. So, mind you, Muhyiddin Yassin has been very effective of not facing that, but the fact is the system would require that you should have that. And then also you see a situation where in Indonesia and the Philippines, you have more checks on abuses of power. So you have more independent anti-corruption bodies, which I think this is not the case in Malaysia. So therefore, in fact, what we've seen is the politicization function of these anti-corruption bodies as tools to sort of foster defections. And this has happened over multiple prime ministerships. So we see a dynamic where when this type of politics comes into a different type of system, it can actually really create more trouble, more challenges to the system. Now, what's interesting is that there are reactions to this, right, among the public. So it's not as if this is going to be the end all and this is how things are going to end up. Mm. I think that people are seeing this and trying to understand it and react to it. And there's a lot of anger and frustration among the electorate because this is not what they wanted. They still want, many people in the public want reform politics. They want reformasi. They want the changes. They want Malaysia to have the kind of maximize its potentials. And they want the politics to be more focused on policies and others. And that has not yet emerged in this dynamic. But it is also, as I said, a hybrid system that is in a period of transition.
And do you think that will be the narrative as we sort of edge closer and closer to the next general elections? Do you think it will be more? Because GE14 was about, you know, the big sort of narrative heading into the 14th general elections was about reformasi, it was about 1MDB, it was things like that. Do you think that the next elections will be more about personalities, about, you know, who's friends with whom, who's teaming with whom? For example, you know, Mahathir and Anwar are still working together. Is Anwar working with Najib and Zahid, you know, as opposed to what's, you know, written on the manifesto?
Well, first of all, no one believes manifestos. I'm not sure if it's because it's got man in the name or not, but it's they don't believe them. You know, I'm just kidding, of course. The fact is that people, the politicians make promises and they haven't fulfilled those promises. And I think this is where the kind of the sense of disappointment is real. And a lot of the trust and confidence in UMNO had left UMNO for many decades because they've been in power for a long time in the coalition through BN. But when Harapan didn't fulfill those promises, then what you saw is a sense of dissatisfaction with the system, the disappointment with the system. So I think, you know, that manifestos, while important, I think they will be important for different reasons. They won't be important for the promises that they deliver, because I think what we saw, for example, in the Sabah state election is that parties refrained from making promises because they didn't know they couldn't deliver. But more, the manifestos will be important for the policy measures that they start to lay out and for the identity that the parties try to project among themselves and the priorities. And I think that will be still important, but that doesn't mean that they will necessarily get the same credence for voters. Now, let's go back to your other element of your question, which is that what do you think will the election be more about personalities? Mm. I want to step back and to point out that, you know, during the period, there is another kind of dimension of politics that has always been weaved through, and that has to do with the race-based, ethnicized politics of
right.
Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that, you know, it was couched in part of all of these different periods of Malaysian politics. In the reform period, race-based politics was used to be an opposition to reform, all right, or at least it was co-opted, and people were seen to be less racist in order to try to win over those who were asking for reform in a kind of polarized context. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind that in 2019, you know, UMNO and PAS used race-based identity politics to try to come back into power, in which they were quite successful of positioning themselves and doing that.
Right.
So when I look to GE15, I see that race-based politics will be a very important part of that kind of agenda of parties. And we saw that come out of the UMNO General Assembly, where UMNO says, oh, I want to introduce Sharia law. Now, this is in a sense, like to compete with PAS and to also
right.
to kind of try to win over the Malay electorate. But it also indicates that they don't have policy, so they begin to turn to old religious type of race-based politics, race-ethnicized politics as a way to try to define themselves. But I still feel mm-hmm. that this element that we're discussing, which is personality politics, will be extremely important. Because the politics, and why will it be important? because this is still how people think about politics, personalities and individuals. And this elite alliances and relationships dominate the media. Media are obsessed with these sets of questions. And we can see, you know, for example, after the UMNO General Assembly, these types of discussions start to emerge again. You know, will UMNO now being independent start to talk to PKR or really continue the conversations that they said they weren't having, but continue those, and some leaders were having them, of course, or will they, you know, try to go completely alone? And this will continue to be the focus of the discussion at the elite level in issues of alliances and personality. And I think because it's partly a product of the fact that there is intense competition, but it's also a product that there is leadership change happening in these parties, right, that our leadership is being contested. And so therefore, the focal point of attention comes on that. For example, even in Harpan, the leadership of Anwar is being tested. In UMNO, with Zahid's facing charges and currently face in trial, his leadership is being contested, as is Muhyiddin Yassin's leadership in this context. Everyone wants to be prime minister in this context. So, but the fact is that these issues will become important because Malaysia is moving away from a dynamic of being a pre-election coalitions to post-election coalitions. So there will be more loose alliances and maybe some sort of electoral pacts in GE15 that will set the parameters so that they will reduce kind of three-party contests. But the fact is that the real kind of who's going to go be with who, right, will start to happen after the election, because you're going to continue to see fragmented politics. And after the election, that's where you're going to see those coalitions emerge. And the way that the Sheraton move sort of reflects a kind of a dynamic of a post-election coalition, but it wasn't what people voted for.
Yes.
And in fact, often the post-election coalitions are not what people voted for. And we see this in coalition systems across the world. So yes, I think these issues of attention to who's with who and will they stay with who and will they break up or will they come back together will still predominate. And unfortunately, these types of conversations about the elites really do very little for helping Malaysia address the fundamental challenges that it's facing in terms of its development, in terms of managing crisis and so forth. These issues are particularly more important in terms of the framing and discussion by the media. And I think that that candidates, it will change for in terms of how people are looking at these issues will actually depends on where people are coming from, whether or not they're urban voters or rural voters and so forth.
All right. I do have a couple of follow-up questions to that. But for now, we do need to go for a very quick break. I'm speaking with Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. And we are talking about the current political landscape and how we sort of went from reform politics to personality politics. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and with me on Skype is Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. And we are talking about our current political landscape and how we've sort of morphed, especially post-Lanka Sheraton, from reform politics to now a very personality-driven political landscape. So, Bridget, before the break, you brought up how post-election coalition, which is something we saw from Lanka Sheraton, is something that is fairly normal in most democracies across the world. If we even see similar situations in a country like the UK. And this reminded me of something you brought up in one of our interviews months and months ago, where you talked about how one of the problems with Malaysian politics right now is that everything is seen through the lens of, oh, you betrayed this, oh, you backstabbed me, you're a traitor and you're sleeping with the enemy, etc. But the thing is, like we just mentioned, countries like in the UK, it's actually very normal for coalitions to be fast and loose, especially post-elections, people, so-called party hopping and whatnot. And it's just seen as part and parcel of the democratic process. Now, do you think one of the reasons why words like, you know, betrayal and traitors, and, you know, is tossed around and then, you know, it shapes our narratives and it becomes like these slogans people, politicians scream at charamas and on social media. Do you think one of the reasons is so prominent in Malaysia because of the personal attachments people feel with specific individuals?
I think it's a combination of things, right? So, you know, because Malaysia is polarized and people, they demonize the other side. It's a zero-sum game politics. It's either you or me. And that I'm the good person, you're the bad person. There's a righteous nature of the way the politics is. I'm the one that's going to save Malaysia. I'm the one that's going to save Islam. Or whatever it is in terms of the way that the politicians describe these processes, right? And this righteous and polarized nature of politics means that there's high emotive connection. And politicians in the system have used polarization as a mechanism, as a means to try to get into power, but galvanize your base through these kind of emotive narratives. And so when someone doesn't fulfill those that base of which they've been built up to save Malaysia and others, they leave that base, they are the betrayers of that cause, they are the traitors of that cause. And multiple individuals have received these labels in mm-hmm. recent times and times of the past. And so it is a real challenge, because personalities and personnel issues that are become the way people are labeled, but it's a reflection of the polarization and the righteous nature of politics. And in other systems, politicians are seen for what they are. They're politicians, and they have to move and make compromises. And in Malaysia, there is still this kind of savior dimension to politics, that they're going to be heroes and they're going to save the country.
And that's exactly what Tok Mat was bringing up. He did an interview with Ezra Awani after the the General Assembly yesterday, the UMNO's General Assembly. And he basically said that, you know, within UMNO, their feeling after losing GE14 was, how is this possible? UMNO is meant to be, you know, the core party of the country. UMNO is meant to be, in his words, were the CEO of the country. And now we are suddenly sidelined. Of course, there's going to be tension.
Well, I think that and this hero discussion of, mm-hmm. Is also deeply cultural in Malay culture, mm-hmm. about, you know, saving the country, saving the community, and these areas of the feudal system. It's all deeply tied into the way politics has been shaped for generations. And what's the challenge in the contemporary environment is that many of the leaders, continue to see themselves as heroes when they don't meet those criteria. And in particular, for example, it really remains, you know, puzzling for people looking at Malaysian politics why someone like Najib Tun Razak, who's a convicted criminal, still walks free and still has people who adore him and make speeches in assemblies. And this, again, goes back to the kind of the feudal nature of personality politics traditionally in this context. And we still see, for example, other actors who are facing criminal charges, such as Zahid Hamidi, who are also seen to have to fit within that. And this is the thing about UMNO. UMNO still is retaining its feudal practices, some of it tied to culture, some of it tied to the way the system and the party has evolved, that it has become so hierarchical and the party hasn't reformed and it hasn't opened up the system. But it's also operating in an environment of more competition. And I think what UMNO is facing is what type of role it should face. And it's caught up in its own battles of personal politics about who should lead the party and the competition. And I think those are going to really predominate. They're supposed to have party elections in July, but I expect that they will extend those much further along the lines. And that means that those issues in the party will still continue to percolate. And UMNO will have a real difficult challenge focusing on the next election when it's trying to deal with its own internal problems.
One thing I want to ask is, what about political parties? Aren't political parties themselves bigger than personalities? Now, what I mean by this is, I'm sort of wondering, if someone, for example, someone like Syed Saddiq, were to run in the upcoming elections, let's assume he's going to run again in Moa, without any party's banner, he's just going to run as an independent candidate, going off his own name. His own name will be the so-called branding and logo. And if he just if he does run as an independent candidate, can he win? And does this sort of translate to other politicians as well, other bigger name politicians?
So I think he's going to have a hard time winning in his particular constituency.
Okay.
Obviously, it will depend on who contests against him. But I think in this context, I think it's going to be real challenging. And I think in part because, you know, it is difficult for individuals to win on their own. We can see in Malaysian politics, independent candidates have had to ally themselves with parties to be even more competitive. And so parties have been the draw, you know, a major focal point of how people engage with voters. And there are other movements, not the, you know, Gerak independent movement and others that are trying to say, you know, we'll slate individual candidates away from these political parties. I think it's extremely challenging for them, including in urban settings, where in urban settings, they have more of a chance because it's less patronage-based politics, and the parties don't have the same kind of machinery in urban areas as generally as they do in rural areas, where that can be much more impactful. And I think that issue-based politics, you know, helps to support independent candidates. But the fact is, I think Syed Saddiq in a place like Moa would face real challenges. And I think it's important to recognize the parties are important, as you've said, but the personalities also shape those parties.
Mm.
And I think what we saw, for example, in the UMNO General Assembly this weekend, we saw someone like Zahid. This was Zahid Hamidi. He defined as president of the assembly the kind of agenda for the assembly. And of course, with him were Najib Tun Razak and Muhammad Hassan. These individuals that became, you know, their personalities were sort of branding that in that context. But, you know, they know that in order for them to be powerful, they need to maintain and to connect to the grassroots. And this is partly what was happening with the AGM. And I think it will be something that the elites are going to have to try to address as they move forward. But more generally, you know, I think that one of the biggest changes in Malaysia and Malaysian politics and the kind of is that we're seeing these really strong political parties, of which there was kind, they're much weaker than they were.
Right.
And the biggest, weakest one is UMNO. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, UMNO is a much more divided party. It's not no longer really has the same access to resources that it had before. And it is wrestling with how to determine its political future with those crises that it has within it. Even PAS, who is now in government, is also facing a real big challenge in terms of its party base, because there it's become much more elitist, and there are questions involved whether or not it can implement this agenda. PAS and DAP both have more ideological roots, and they've in terms of their leadership, but their leadership also is affecting how these parties are being seen going through these sets of alliances. And it's not PAS that's governing, it's PAS that's working with PN to govern. And it wasn't DAP that was governing under Harapan, it was DAP working with other parties to govern, particularly Bersatu at that time, led by Mahathir.
Mm-hmm.
And so the big ones really do matter. The weaker parties are less influential. And I think what we're seeing as a situation is that independent candidates are really struggling with having to work with political parties, and why is that? Because political parties have brand name, bigger brand name, especially among rural voters, among lower class voters who don't, and about half the electorate that don't really follow politics. You know, many Malaysians are interested in politics, people who would listen to this podcast, for example. But most Malaysians couldn't care less about politics and are really tired of it and fed up about it. And in that context, this is where party brand name becomes important. People engage, and they engage for a period of time. And then they say, okay, I'll stick with this, I'll stick with that. And this is where the parties now themselves are also facing challenges because their brand doesn't have the same purchasing power that it did in the past.
Right. So I was in one of the rooms on Clubhouse yesterday and listening to the founders of Undi 18 talk and some lawyers. And one of the founders is Tarma Pillay. And one thing he brought up was that he sometimes thinks a lot of our parliament members, our MPs, don't understand policy making, although they are policy makers. And thinking about it, right, a lot of politicians in Malaysia sort of build their branding by going, you know, especially if we notice in recent months, you know, going door to door, providing laptops, you know, giving money to their constituents, for example, rolling up their pants and going barefooted in the floods. Now, all of this is cool, right? You know, you want to help the people on that sort of level. But do you think the masses building the myth of these political actors because of these, you know, seemingly noble gestures are a bad thing? Because the primary job of a politician, especially if you're an MP or an ADUN, should be about crafting policies so that nobody should have to go door-to-door handing out laptops to anyone.
I think that, you know, Dash, in asking this question, you really indicate that you're an urban voter and you think about politics very differently than many Malaysians. Mm. You know, Malaysian politics has been a patronage system. You go and you deliver the goods, whether or not it's a laptop or whether or not it's a bag of rice. And I think that, you know, the policy process, there are more indications of that coming outside of the process than inside the process. So we're talking about think tanks and discussions among the political space that's happening in Malaysia. But for many of the politicians don't have the acumen and don't have the skill sets for policymaking. And I think that they think that the electorate cannot understand those issues. So they try to simplify it and they try to focus on deliverable of goods as opposed to thinking about laying out a set of policy initiatives because they know that this is not necessarily going to get them elected. And this is where, you know, you have multiple Malaysias and you have many different types of politicians that are operating. And I think that in this regard, you know, this is where the system is changing. The nature and politicians are branding themselves in different ways. And so now they have to not only give out the laptop, they have to show pictures on social media of them giving the laptop out. And we're seeing politicians who go door to door for a picture opportunity, but in fact, just to go there and don't talk to people, don't engage, don't listen. In that context. Mm. And so I think what we're seeing is that politicians are going to have to take on new roles and adopt that. And not many of them are quite ready to do what you've talked about, which is to talk about policies in a meaningful way. They would rather come into politics for the purposes of making money and competing with others who are making money. And that's where, Malaysia is at in this difficult time of transition, where you have people who have aspirations for them sitting down and making policies and solving the issues with those that are actually not interested in doing that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a problem? As in this idea of, again, it's not a criticism towards the politicians who, you know, go on the ground and, you know, as you say, give out rice bags. But do you think that this is a problem in the sense that politicians can build their personality? You can take all these photos, you know, to show that you're one of the people and you love your constituency and you're there, you know, to do all these things. And, you know, sometimes they have these big open houses and invite people in their constituency, all sorts of things like that. Do you think this sort of helps them build the myth around their name, build a legacy without actually needing to go to parliament and debate and try and get those issues resolved on a policy level?
So we talked earlier about politicians, mm-hmm. and politicians are politicians. So what do politicians want? They want to make the most money they can in the system. Right. They want to be reelected. Mm-hmm. So part of the challenge is that policy discussion is not is focused on reelection, not necessarily on what's good for the country. And so, for example, we take back to you, the question you were raising earlier about UNDE 18. You know, here's PAS was a party that supported automatic registration. It was a party that actually voted and pushed for a broadening of UNDE 18 because they know that traditionally their political supporters are among younger voters. And now we saw, you know, once they're in government, they are actually adopting, their president adopted this very, I think, pejorative phrase of calling young people, you know, needing maturity. I think that, you know, it took an alternative position. Now, what happens? Why is that? It's because policy discussions are focused on political priorities as opposed to national priorities. And I think when we you ask me what the problems are, is that there is not enough attention from politicians across the spectrum to what the national addressing the national problems. And if there was one aspect about Muhyiddin Yassin's government that is positive, is that there has been a more articulation of certain policy initiatives. The problem is that the political environment do not have the kind of the wherewithal to want to engage these things in a meaningful way. And many of these initiatives are being implemented in ways that are seen to be prioritizing personal interests as opposed to national interests. So it's not just the policies themselves, it's how they've been implemented and who's implementing and so forth. And so I think the problem is how to move towards an environment where that politicians can work in and making compromise to address the problems for the country. Right. And in the past, UMNO would have said that they would manage that. But the fact is that they are no longer in that position. They have a much junior portfolio than the CEO. And there are many other people who are now wanting to be CEO. And as a consequence, you know, the type of policy initiatives and others are being pushed up, but they're being perceived in frames of what's in it for them as opposed to what's in it for the country. And that will involve more pressure to move the system in a different direction. And in the dynamic of personal and personality politics, it's very hard because everyone is still focusing on looking at themselves in the mirror, and they only see themselves and they don't see the country or they don't see others in the mirror. And if they do see others in the mirror, it's only as competition, not necessarily as someone to be able to work with. And this, and again, is part of the challenges of what's going on now in contemporary Malaysia.
Now, Bridget, do you think personality politics will play less of a role in the coming years as more and more young people start to become official members of the electorate, right? Because there are a lot of people who say that younger people, they may not necessarily automatically be progressive or liberals, right, just because they are young, but a lot of young people, regardless of whether you're rural or urban, they seem to have the less baggage or attachments towards traditional voting patterns as compared to their parents. So do you think personality politics will play less of a role in coming years?
It's too early to say, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we have to see how the system evolves. But I think young people reflect older people in terms of their voting patterns, and that they're not necessarily as policy engaged. Well, some young people are very much more policy engaged. There are a lot of people who are disengaged. Mm-hmm. 4 million people among young people have not voted above 21, have not even registered.
That's right.
So I think that it depends on who you're speaking about. But I do think that doesn't take away from the substance of what your question is asking. It says, how will the system evolve? And I think that there are – three elements to highlight here. First of all, young people have had more choices, so they will expect more choices at the electoral and at the election, and they choose and consider different sets of choices. In the past, most older voters had one choice, and they took that choice. Now, people have many choices, and I think that this is something that they want those choices. So the system will expect to have choices. Number two, I think that their interests they're on the front line. Young people are on the front line of the real challenges the country are facing, in terms of they can't afford homes, they have high levels of indebtedness. They're the ones that have facing the bulk of the issues of unemployment. And so the issues and challenges that the country are facing are often experienced at a greater intensity among young people. This is not completely true, because there are other large vulnerable groups, but more broadly, in the sense that they are the front line, and they are the future. So they know that they have to fix it. So they will offer different pressure points in that context. And number three, they are going to be a larger share of the electorate, so they'll have more power. Because they are just the sheer numbers. No politician is going to get into power by denying and disenfranchising younger voters. They can do this on the short term, but on the long term, they will face regrets.
All right. On that note, Bridget, thank you so much for joining me today.
Most welcome, Dash.
That was Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. And we were talking about our current political landscape right now and how we sort of transformed, especially post-Lanka Sheraton, from reform politics that we were sort of centered around heading into G14 to a very heightened, very strong personality-driven politics that is dominating our space right now. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my. You can even subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. You just have to search BFM Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Darshan Johan, and you've been listening to Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.